And good afternoon. Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and often with me is Phil Conrad. We'll see if Phil was... He's probably en route. And today we're going to talk to Stephen Gowans. We'll be doing that at about 5:30. He's written a very interesting article. By the way, it's gowans.wordpress.com. Title of his article is Why Assad Refuses to Step Down. And it opens with a really nice quote. He takes it from Paris Match. It says, many people say the solution lies in your departure. This is an interview Paris Match did with President Assad, your departure. Do you believe that your departure is the solution? And the Syrian President Assad answered, what was the result of French policy when they attacked Gaddafi? Chaos ensued after Gaddafi's departure. So what was the departure? Was departure the solution? Have things improved? And has Libya become a democracy? The Paris Match guy didn't really answer, of course, the president's question. By the way, that interview in Paris Match is something folks should read. And Gowans, of course, follows on that with pointing out that U.S. policy is one of regime change for governments that will not toe the line, which is now kind of – it's understood that that is U.S. policy. So he's going to explain to us that and his long and informative discussion of this matter. I want to talk about some other things. We have some historical details to get into in the period between now and when we speak to Stephen Gowans. First of all, I'm going to take the liberty of reviewing a film without seeing it, and that I'm going to review the reviews or the publicity. And no, it's not the interview, although we should do that one too. About the interview, I would say that America is set now on a torture program for the American people. You're not a patriot unless you go and watch this film and pay Sony all that money. And then if you don't laugh loud enough, I think they'll make you stay and watch it again. And it'll get worse and worse as the hours pass. So it's they just can't leave the torture alone. They're going to subject everybody to that lousy film. But the film that really interests me is The Sniper, the American Sniper. And I noticed that the subtitle is something about the American with the most lethal, the most lethal sniper in American history. And to me, it represents a serious form of political decadence, military decadence, certainly, because the sniper is probably one of the least insignificant figures on a battlefield. The romance of the sniper, one assumes, is based on the notion of individualism, because you can't talk about an ordinary soldier. You have to have a guy who's doing it all by himself, and then you get to watch him all day long as he kills women and children. But this is sort of, you see, the passing grade of the new macho figure in American history is his willingness to kill women and children. And then we're supposed to feel sorry for him because he had to do that, which is know too that the man who talks to chairs, Clint Eastwood, is the director, and it couldn't be more appropriate. They were going to get Spielberg. I'd love to have heard the conversation. If those who hacked Sony have the conversation between Spielberg and the representatives of the estate of Chris Kyle, the American Sniper, if they have those, I hope they'll disclose them. Because behind this veneer of men in dungarees and dark glasses and high-powered rifles with scope and all that, and the women who, of course, cling to them before they go off to battle, etc., and then put up with them when they come home drunk and beat them up, and again, it's all our fault that the guys are drunk and whatever else. But at any rate, behind it is business. One of the things we now know about Chris Kyle, the figure in the story, is that he had business partners in a security firm which he formed to try to take advantage of his reputation of being a master of the high-powered rifle and a willingness to kill women and children, is that his wife inherited his part of the business, but there was some sort of little glitch in the contract caused his partners, he had two male partners, and they have cut her out of the business. And my understanding is they paid her something like $12,500, bought her part, and she's standing on the outside looking in, and she has asked for an audit, and they say it's none of her business. So this guy, Chris Kyle, and his wonderful friends, yeah, it all seems to be business. And the biggest aspect of Mr. Kyle's story, of course, is not treated by Clint Eastwood, the part that should interest us, in my opinion, and that is that he went from being a man who was served in Iraq in a war that was illegal. It was never a declared war. It was based on a lie. The country was devastated, people wiped out by the thousands. He was at Fallujah, which, by the way, was a vengeance action on the part of the U.S. military. They had been humiliated when some private contractors were set on fire by the local population, and they decided they were going to make an example of Fallujah. That's my own military analysis from this distance. They were going to make an example. So he was at Fallujah. He did these things, and then he noticed that he got attention because they ran the numbers up on how many people he had killed, which they put the number at, they say, confirmed kills, 150. You know, he's not a pilot. He's not an ace. These things are all totally unofficial. People get involved in numbers. Again, it's a form of, in my opinion, military decadence because you're losing track of what it's about. If it's like the quarterback who throws for 10,000 yards and 50 touchdowns in a season, and then you ask him, did you make it to the playoffs? And the answer is no. And you say, well, really, why is it important then that we're talking about all your personal numbers? The personal numbers have no bearing necessarily on the outcome. And this is true of him. But, of course, they wanted a figure. So he produced this book together with his plan for a security firm, so that you attract customers to the firm. It wasn't his money. He didn't have any money. So other people put up the money so he can have a security firm. But they then created this image of the Texas cowboy, the guy who dropped snuff and cursed all the time and was rough and tough, but, of course, decent and honest, a heart of gold, actually, when he wasn't drunk and when he wasn't fighting and et cetera. And it was good for business, and they got this book out. Stephen Colbert interviewed him. All kinds of people interviewed him. And, of course, business would go up or down depending upon how much press he was getting, which led to another aspect of his character, which Mr. Eastwood will not treat because Clint Eastwood is as dishonest as this guy, Chris Kyle. I don't think I'd mind if I ever ran into Kyle as a person. But once you become an enterprise and there's a bunch of money behind you and there are people saying, hey, our numbers are down, you got to do something to get a little more press, then you're just dealing with a poor, sad creature. And here's an example of what I mean by poor, sad creature. He told a story in front of a bunch of people, one of whom was a prominent Hollywood actor who had been hired to dub the voice for a documentary they were making about him. He told a room full of people that he and a pal, former Navy SEAL, had gone to New Orleans after Katrina and had gotten up onto the roof of the Superdome. Are you listening? This is, I'm telling you about the American sniper, the great hero. He said they got on the roof of the Superdome with their sniper rifles and killed 30 people. 30, he said. Now, of course, the classic way to deal with this when you get to court is to say, that must have been the beer talking. The problem is, there is not a shred of evidence that he did it. By the way, that's the good news, because he is sitting on a roof with a sniper rifle and killing black people, let's assume. I think that's pretty safe to assume in New Orleans. After Katrina killed 30, he called them armed. Okay, let's just be mean and cruel about this. Chris Kyle, American sniper, where are the bodies? And where is the gun with the body? And now I'm going to ask you another thing. How do we know you did all that heroic stuff over in Iraq? My guess is you didn't do that either. This is, as I say, we're discussing decadence. The military suffers from decadence as much as any other aspect of culture. And this is a demonstration of it. This guy began to seriously lose it in front of everybody. But because he was our favorite killer, favorite long-range murderer, and we're supposed to regard him as a hero, nobody bothered to follow up. And by the way, okay, then he stumbled onto somebody famous. He got on television, and in his book, he made allusions to Jesse Ventura, former governor of Minnesota, another rather colorful character. But Jesse Ventura had been in the Navy SEALs. So Chris Kyle told people that he had gone to a get-together of old, you know, good old buddies, good old boys of the Navy SEALs, and that they had they were talking. Jesse Ventura was present, and he said Jesse Ventura had been bad-mouthing the Navy SEALs and the American war effort in Iraq, and he told Ventura that he better cut it out or pipe down, and that Ventura did not respond appropriately, so he decked him, as you know. And you can't, and it's always got to be one punch, because we've all learned how to fight from watching the movies. It's all over in one punch, so he decked him. Well, he bumped into a problem. Jesse Ventura, as you know, is not a fainting flower. And so Jesse Ventura said, well, there's two problems. One, I never met this man in my life. And two, that never happened. And, I'm going to add three. I'm going to sue your butt, and we're going to find out about this. And guess who won the lawsuit? Jesse Ventura. He won $1.8 million from the American Sniper, because the American Sniper was a liar. So I don't feel happy that people put him out there. Why don't we just let him be an ordinary guy and nobody's going to get mad? But if Clint Eastwood is going to try to make a big thing of this, then everybody's going to have to pay the price. You don't get the call just to tell these stories that you whipped Jesse Ventura, that you got on the top of the Superdome with a high-powered rifle and a scope and killed 30 Americans. And because, you know, that way you were helping out the Louisiana Police Department, he said. No. It didn't happen. It didn't happen. And then there's a story that he told. And again, there's no disputing this story. He said, "This is." I'm talking about Chris Kyle, who, by the way, they formed a funeral cortege. Is that the word for that? Their field has shown up. A cortege from Austin to Lubbock or something. About 200 miles of people standing with their hands over their hearts. Okay, well, listen, you suckers. Here's what he did. He told a story that he was went in to get gas one night, and he was, of course, half cut, and et cetera, and had been dropping snuff and whipping people. Anyway, he came out and saw two bad guys who wanted to take his truck. So he said, you can have the truck, but let me get my jacket. He reaches in, pulls out a gun, and shoots them both dead at the service station, kill them both. And so somebody said, okay, I see the paperwork on that one. And, well, they asked the sheriff of the county in which he said it happened. And he said, no, and I would have heard. Believe me, if somebody killed two guys in my area, I would have heard. So they thought, well, let's be fair to the boy. Let's go next door to the next county. Might have been another county. No, nobody. No two guys got shot dead at a service station by a guy whipping out a fancy pistol. And by the way, he even told us what kind of pistol it was. And he shot them both, you know. Well, no, it didn't happen at all. This is a man who had, and I'm going to give him I'm even being nice to him. He was, in my opinion, telling these stories because he's trying to keep his name in the papers and try to keep his business turning over, because he was selling security business. Well, he did sell. He had one customer that you will all remember, and that was Sarah Palin. He was the bodyguard for Sarah Palin. The American Sniper was the bodyguard Sarah Palin. And, well, she didn't die, so I guess he was a big success. I've saved a lot of people. You ever do that trick of saying, may this house be safe from tigers? And they say, why do you always say that? And I say, you ever have any trouble with tigers? And anyhow, he did that for Sarah Palin. But now another thing, let's be very clear. The American government and the American military, hello guys, military, you awake? You say you have a problem with racism in the military, and you have a problem with particularly sexual assault, sexism, macho stuff. This guy, in his memoir, American Sniper, says of officers, they say, well, what do you think of, you know, what the officers like when you were in Iraq? And he said, well, some of them were okay, some of them weren't so good, and the rest of them, a bunch of women. He didn't use the word women, by the way. He used the women word that I'm sure you can all conjure. Now, why didn't the U.S. military say, this guy is a damn disgrace? He is a disgrace. You little boys and girls out there who are thinking about going in the military, this is not what we are looking for in the way of a soldier. We, for example, we have women who serve in the U.S. military and occupy every level of rank, from top generals down. So this man who refers to officers who he doesn't has contempt for as women, he don't belong in the military. He doesn't belong. You're supposed to say to him, hey, you got in the wrong organization. Maybe you ought to go over and apply with the Klan or somebody. They might take that stuff, but we don't take it, you see? That's supposed to be it. Now, in the matter of race, he particularly didn't like Obama. Incidentally, he's a cold, hard-wing, right-wing guy. And again, I can't indulge in the kind of obscenities necessary to tell this story, probably. But I will tell you that the American Sniper, one night a friend of his, to make him mad, because these are good old boys, so they play pranks on each other, you know, let the air out of each other's tires and, you know, take the round out of the chamber so you miss the buck. His pal slipped over and put an Obama sticker on his car, made him really mad. So the next night, he slipped over to his buddy's place, and he put a sticker on his buddy's car that says, I like black blank. That was their idea of a little joke between them. Now, again, I'm just telling you, and this is a little advice, U.S. military. You want to save yourself, you better start stopping this stuff. This is bunk. You're really into serious bunk now, and you are going to demoralize everybody. If this is your idea of a military hero and all that, well, you know, you're in trouble. Not that I want them to rescue themselves, I'm just being neighborly. Now, the other thing is, let's get down to the details, and I recommend you go to the New Yorker magazine and read an article by Nicholas Schmidl, and it's titled Eddie Ray Roth's story in the crosshairs, because this story has a strange ending. We're watching this movie. I don't know if it deals with this, but Chris Kyle, a year ago, was killed. In February 2013. Among the things that he and friends thought they would do, they were going to help form ex-vets, people who had served and were like themselves. Only they understand. And I'm starting to get a little tired of hearing that expression, only they understand each other, what we've all been through. Well, you know, the man who killed him, on February 13, a funny thing happened. Chris Kyle had set himself up as somebody who could help ex-vets, and so they could come. He'd be their buddy. He'd take them. And his idea, get a load of this, of therapy for someone with post-traumatic stress syndrome, was to take them out to the firing range or to go hunting with them. And he's out in a part of Texas where you ranchers have their own firing ranges and their own hunting areas. You want to hunt in America? Half the time you have to go to a rancher. All my experiences with that were bad. But anyhow, so the family of Mr. Roth or Ruth, got in touch with him and said, you know, Eddie was 4 years in Iraq, and he came back a mess. He hadn't been in the best shape before he went. A lot of people join the military because their lives are not too happy, and so it hadn't been a very happy life, and he went off to Iraq. It was 4 years, and he kept calling his father from places, and his conversations were, this is crazy. This is a waste. People are being hurt here for no good reason and whatnot. I don't know why I'm here. And his father said, you ought to come home. Eventually he did, but he drank terribly. He took the Veterans Administration idea was to give him as much. Whenever he came in, they gave him so much medicine that his family said he couldn't, you know, function. So they let him out, and he was threatening the family, being generally disruptive. And they said to him, we got to do something. So they realized that there's an American sniper. It's only 20 miles down the road. He's got this thing. So they asked him. He said, sure, I'll look after him. So one day he comes and picks up Eddie to take him out to the firing range. Now, Eddie, as I say, was 4 years in the Marine Corps overseas, and he's post-PTSD. Whatever it is. And they go. They went to the firing range, and they put up the flag indicating they're out there shooting, and nobody's supposed to come anywhere near them. After a while, a guy who worked there drove by, and he noticed there were two bodies, and Chris Kyle's truck was missing. And then the sister said she got a phone call from Eddie. This is straight out of a movie called Paris, Texas, as far as I'm sure. He phoned and said, I think I lost my soul. She said, what do you mean? He said, I traded it for a truck. And so the sniper had been shot dead, and his pal, a big businessman down the road, he was filled full of holes. And Eddie had the truck. Eddie's now in jail, and his trial will be coming up in 2014. If you wanted to make a movie, Hollywood, I'd say make both those stories and put them together, fold them together, the way the author of the New Yorker piece folded them together. It was published. You can find it. It's called In the Crosshairs. I keep wanting to call him Eddie Lee. Eddie Ray Routh. That's the name of the story. And it will tell you something about the reality of this story. Incidentally, he was called, when he was the sniper, they said he was called the Devil of Ramadi. And so I said, well, who called him that? Well, there is no source. They told each other that. And, you know, Doonesbury created a character not long ago, a kid who lived in a basement somewhere who wrote a fictional story about himself and his account of being overseas and killing everybody. And they made movies and books and go to that. If you want a ready reference, if you want to see what went on with this, just read Doonesbury. Not that Doonesbury gets it. As far as I'm concerned, he is much too loving and of the military. It's not good for the military to stroke their shoes. It'll just make them worse. They need some discipline. They need some mature leadership, which gives me 5 minutes to give you an example of mature leadership. I have told you the story of the American sniper. And don't be a sucker, please. And for Clint Eastwood, for crying out loud, tell him to grow up. I know it's almost too late, but he should. Now, on this date in 1865, approximately, William Tecumseh Sherman's Union Army broke the back of the Confederate Army, and as he moved into Savannah, Georgia, he was followed by 10,000 escaped. Well, I should not call them escaped, freed slaves, people who were leaving their masters because their masters were being defeated at war. And they reached Savannah. They had an immediate issue they hadn't thought about. That is, thousands and thousands of African Americans who were refugees poured into the city. And one of the most wonderful things happened. The Secretary of War, Mr. Stanton, arrived. And he convened a meeting with General William Tecumseh Sherman and the black leadership of Savannah in the person of a man named Frazier, who had bought his own freedom some years before. And they said to him, what do you want us to do? What shall we do about the situation? And he said, we would like land. we would like to have so that we can sustain ourselves. Leading then to the decision that made by General Tecumseh Sherman, which was General Order Number 15, known to you as 40 Acres and a Mule. He said, all of these people here who were slaves are now free in America, and they will be given 40 acres. And the means to sustain that, any additional means we could supply, which is where we get the idea of the mule, because you're going to have a plow, you're going to need a mule. And so the army, that's one of the things they could give them, was mules. But I'm going to tell you that there was a little detail in this you should appreciate that I never see remarked on. I was reading the order last night, and in the order he said that they shall cover the Atlantic seaboard for 30 miles in from the ocean all the way to Florida. So in other words, he's buying security for his forces. Those African Americans freed from slavery would be his security for the whole East Coast, because the order said there will be no white people allowed there. In other words, white Southerners couldn't go back in there looking either to take over those slaves or to recapture the area. They won't be allowed. That was a very important moment. And that decision of Stanton, Secretary of War, and Sherman, and of Mr. Frazier, the black leader of Savannah, who, by the way, at that moment, he is the most important man in Savannah. And that has been remarked on in history books. that decision remained in place until Lincoln was assassinated. And then Mr. Johnson, who succeeded from his vice presidency, a man from Tennessee who was a deep racist, he countermanded the order. But every African-American has every right to say, you promised, it's right there. And General Saxton, who was the deputy to Sherman, said, I'm not lying to these people. When we say we're giving them 40 acres and a mule, we mean it. Because he said, I'm not going to lie to them. Don't ask me to do that. If we're going to say this, it's for real. And by the way, it was implemented. And it would have continued on, but of course that's the whole history of the story of Reconstruction. So I would say the American military, there's an example to learn from. Go and study what happened in Savannah in late December. I said 1864. I stand corrected. I love correcting myself. I catch myself all the time. Anybody else does it, I get unhappy.